Welcome to The Ultimate Guide to Partnering. In this podcast, Vince Menzione, a proven industry sales and partner executive, brings together technology leaders in this forum to discuss transformational trends and to deconstruct successful strategies to thrive and survive in the rapid age of cloud transformation. And now your host, Vince Menzione.
My guest today is Bill Hawkins, Microsoft's partner leader for the U.S. public sector healthcare business. Bill is responsible for setting the strategy for partners engaged in Microsoft's healthcare business around the company's core priorities and driving mutually beneficial outcomes. As Bill describes it, I work closely with partners across the ecosystem to accelerate their growth, solve for business needs, and continuously search for innovative solutions. I'm a partner and relationship manager with a proven track record of exceeding customer and partner expectations, and I always enjoy building relationships that lead to new solutions and new growth for my partners and customers. Bill is a resident of Nashville, Tennessee, the self-professed healthcare capital of the U.S. Welcome, Bill, to the podcast.
Thank you, Vince. I'm actually sitting in Nashville today where it's nice and bright and sunny and full of healthcare opportunity.
Great. Well, Bill, I want to first begin by thanking you for being one of my first podcast guests. Healthcare is such an important vertical market for Microsoft and in IT in general, and I thought this would be an excellent place to focus. And you and I have had the opportunity to work side by side for multiple years at Microsoft, and I've known you as a consummate seller and partner leader, and I'm sure our growing audience would welcome the opportunity to learn more about how to engage with Microsoft in healthcare and what pitfalls to avoid. Thank you for joining.
Thank you, Vance. I really appreciate it.
Explain to our listeners in simple terms what exactly you do at Microsoft and the mission of your role.
Yeah, the way I look at it, Vince, is as I'm always looking to help partners build their business in healthcare. Healthcare is going through a major transformation today where in the past, healthcare was a volume-based business. It was the number of patients you saw. It was the number of beds that you could turn. It was always volume, volume. And over the last really 3 to 5 years, that's begun to pivot towards an outcomes-based business. And outcomes-based businesses drive different behaviors all the way through the ecosystem. And so at Microsoft, my responsibility really is to look at our partner ecosystem, understand if we have the correct partners to be able to address the business needs, to be able to make that pivot to help our customers understand where they are in the outcomes business, and also constantly searching for those net new solutions, those net new partners that are helping us drive digital transformation into the healthcare marketplace based on Microsoft Cloud services.
So I want to peel back a little bit here. You mentioned outcomes, and for people listening to the podcast that don't understand healthcare, don't know very much about it, what do you mean specifically about outcomes-based business?
So today in healthcare, it's all about wellness. In the past, we looked at healthcare as an events-oriented industry. So you cut your finger, you go to the local ER. You're maybe in a high-risk population that's maybe diabetes. What we looked at were events that occurred along that path, and then we treated those as an event, not as a total 360 of that consumer, of that patient. And so outcomes are all about really improving wellness along that person's life, not just improving it in really a window of time. And so outcomes are a measurement. They're looked at across such things as hospital-acquired infections. So if I'm a consumer and I go in for some type of care in a hospital, am I picking up infections as a result of that? If I am, then perhaps there's things that need to be improved so I'm not then readmitted. And oh, by the way, readmissions are another measure, another key outcome. Another key outcome that providers look for are scoring, coming back from their consumers or their patients, really saying how their stay was and how their treatment was and how their at-home program is going. So those are called HCAHPS scores. And all the providers along the way are incented to improve their outcomes and to meet certain outcome thresholds in the way that they're paid either by the federal or the state or by a plan based on those outcome measurements.
So is that being driven by the Affordable Care Act, or what are the drivers to measure in that respect, the outcomes?
Yeah, and I would really go all the way back to a key study that was done about 15 years ago now that said, you know, X number of lives were lost during the last 2 to 3 years as a result of improper care. And there was an initial reaction to that, that most providers thought that the study was in error, but the drill down proved to be correct, that there were too many people really losing their lives, if you will, based on improper care. First initiative really behind that, and the first area that everybody really looked at from a provider perspective, a plan perspective or payer perspective, was around medication. And, you know, were we following the five rights of medication administration? So the right drug, right patient, right time, et cetera. Was that being followed? And so there was an outcome that was really being measured around the five rights of medication administration. And then since then, other studies have come out that have talked about areas from a provider perspective that could be improved. And then that really started the process of looking at healthcare as a 360 event for a patient, not as a point in time. And how do you really look at it as a 360? Well, you have to look at that person's life and the outcomes that are measured as a result of them being engaged in your particular provider network. And that could be as simple as a hospital event, an ER event. But typically, it involves more than just that now. It involves that 360, so medication adherence, the PT that follows a hip replacement. All those pieces are now measured, and all those pieces now are incented based on how well a provider or a group of caregivers provide that care.
Let's take this and transpose Microsoft and partners to this. So how do you look at your partner ecosystem? I know Microsoft has a set of priorities and businesses it's trying to drive.
Right.
How do you take those priorities? I want to ask you about those priorities, but then how do you take that and couple that across what providers and payers and life sciences companies are looking to achieve?
Yeah, and we really want to think about it as digital transformation. I think it as business transformation. Certainly any business transformation today is going to be a digital transformation of some type. And when I think about healthcare, I really think about it from a provider, payer, and then consumer perspective. But then when you really boil it all down, you're boiling it down to really healthcare moving towards a consumer-focused model. And we look at it across how the patients are engaged, about how the care teams are empowered throughout that care cycle, about how we can work with both providers and the plans to optimize both their clinical and also their operational effectiveness. So the back office piece of that. And then really talk about how devices and the communication collaboration across those multiple devices are transforming and can transform, continue to transform that whole care continuum. So that's really about that wellness 360 that we think about when it comes to a consumer. From a Microsoft perspective, it's all about understanding how our platforms, our cloud platforms, which are Azure, Office 365, and CRM, how those tools are utilized really throughout a particular provider or a particular plan to help them optimize both the experience for the consumer and also the bottom line for their shareholders. Some of the key trends that I see now are really about engaging the patient wherever that patient is. It's engaging the patient in a very social way. So if the patient is doing a search on a particular, let's say, pain they're experiencing, and they want to see who in that area could potentially help them from a provider perspective, specialist perspective, how are the various providers in that particular area of care being promoted out to those potential patients. So how are you engaging the patients where they live? And today, a lot of the patients live in social media, whether it be Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn, or whether it be something as simple as a browser and a search engine. how are you engaging those patients and helping them understand how you can help them with their particular health concern or wellness concern that they're having? So how are we engaging those patients, both socially, and now how do we engage them once they're inside of, if you will, that particular provider? So how are they engaged during their care? And are they engaged only within the walls of that particular health system? Or are we engaging them outside the walls to ensure that there's medication adherence, that they're doing their physical therapy, that all the things that really lead to better wellness are being tracked and scored and also being prompted, if you will, to ensure that there's adequate follow-up and that the patient or the consumer is progressing towards their wellness goals. And then as you think about care teams, I think in the past, we thought about care teams as those specialists that are providing care during an event. Well, actually, the care teams are more than that. The care teams are those specialists, are those doctors, those nurses, those physicians, those specialists, et cetera. But they're also the family and the neighbor and the community. So how are you empowering everybody within a 360 view of the consumer to be able to participate in enabling wellness for that particular individual? So I think about tools such as Office 365 and the collaboration that you can drive across care teams, both those that are formal care teams and those that are informal, which are the neighbors and the family members, et cetera. How can we utilize Skype to enable those conversations to occur between caregivers and the consumer or the patient? And then how can we use tools such as Skype as well in regards to engaging the patient? We've got some fairly inventive partners out there, and we're doing a lot of really cool things today with just some simple tools. So you and I usually think about Connect as a gaming device that sits with Xbox as a camera device and allows you to do some pretty cool things with fitness programs. We have several partners that have looked at Connect as an opportunity to do some development and actually turn what used to be a fitness-type opportunity into a physical therapist-type opportunity, to where actually somebody can do their PT at home and follow a very prescriptive plan that's demonstrated on screen. The camera tracks that person's adherence to what they should be doing in an exercise motion and actually tracks their flexibility and their improvements that they make over time and then reports that back into a PT. So again, a very unique and new way to engage the patient in the place where the patient or the consumer really wants to have their care delivered, which is typically at home and not sitting in an office. And then the other area, Vince, that we really see a lot of interest in and where we really see the power of our platform is really looking at all of the data that sits in healthcare today. It sits in a lot of disparate systems. It could sit in the electronic medical record. It could sit in a back office spreadsheet. It could sit in a data lake. And it's just volumes and volumes of data, everything from just what I would say kind of that simple data that simply that usually sits in a spreadsheet to the very complex data that has to do with all the different types of imaging that occurs around a patient as they go through their life's journey. So how do we take all that data and then understand overall as a health system how we're performing and then individually how we're actually helping that patient in their wellness journey? And so the analytics piece of what we're seeing today by many of our partners is getting more prescriptive in nature. So we're doing a lot of predictive analytics today. So we can look at data for a particular care pathway, whether it be diabetes or whether it be something that's related to a particular disease that's prevalent in that person's family. And we can, with some amount of prediction, say that this amount of population on this particular economic condition is going to be more predictable going towards this type of care being needed, as opposed to just kind of randomizing individuals as they come in and out of our system. So it's getting to that predictive model that says for both plans and our providers, how well they are actually going to be able to treat the individuals that live within a geography they provide that care. and how many of those individuals that sit within that demographic are actually going to be high risk. And if they are high risk, why are they high risk? Again, what disease is prevalent amongst that demographic? And then how do we do things in a way that helps prevent as opposed to just treat those particular consumers? So predictive analytics is something that's being done across all areas of care. And what we're trying to move to now is prescriptive. And so prescriptive brings in the whole genomic side of healthcare. Microsoft, as well as many others, are investing millions of dollars in genomic sequencing and getting to that predictive piece of medicine that we want to be able to ascribe to. And it will provide people, as we look forward, 10, 20, 30 years, really a much better life, and will allow us to prescriptively do things genomically that will be able to help people live a better, fuller, and healthier life.
You know, you're talking about big data, you're talking about genomics, predictive analytics, prescriptive analytics. I think one of the terms I've heard used is the democratization of AI or artificial intelligence. Do you want to expand on that a little bit? Is that something that resonates with what you're doing?
We just came from the HIMSS conference. This year was held in Orlando, Florida. If you look at the size of that conference, and I've been at the HIMSS conference now for well over a decade, and just the growth of who's there and what's being demonstrated and what's being talked about, it's just been phenomenal. So this year we had, roughly 45,000 people over the span of, 3 days at the conference, well over, I would say, 2,000 different types of partners with solutions sitting out there, probably approaching this year, probably closer to 3,000. And, of all the things that were going on across this huge floor, we had our Microsoft booth, a corner of it, just focused on demonstrating HoloLens. HoloLens, obviously, is what I would call augmented reality or augmented AI, artificial intelligence. So think about how being able to virtualize the human body such that you feel like with the HoloLens on that you can just reach out and touch something that's not there, and be able to use that as a teaching platform for academics. And so today, typically most teaching universities today are using what's always been used, cadavers, to go in and really to learn about the human anatomy, to learn particular procedures, to do all that early learning, if you will, that has to happen in the medical environment. We've got a couple of universities that have picked up on HoloLens or are using HoloLens now for that very same process, and they're able to advance much more quickly. More students are able to participate on a daily basis, and they're also able to program in or built into this AI environment multiple type of situations that occur during a particular surgery or during a particular process. Just taking what is available in the market and then understanding the application to healthcare and applying that so it accelerates a particular piece of that healthcare experience or that wellness experience. In this case, actually accelerating a teaching experience so that more students are able to go through a particular exercise or particular training in a much faster way so that they progress their careers much more quickly.
So 2,000 to 3,000 partners, and I think about you leading this partner engagement model for the healthcare business. What do you do to find and choose the right partners, enable them on Microsoft, engage them with the field organization, and drive the results that Microsoft is looking to drive across their outcomes?
Well, I'd love to say that that was just me, just a team of people at Microsoft. So when I think about our U.S. healthcare organization, we've got some extremely talented, extremely experienced people that sit in our organization, from doctors to nurses to key and chief strategists. We have them both at the worldwide level, at the U.S. level, We've got great partners in the business that go to market with us every day and help us to continue to net new avenues for solutions. But when you look across this kind of sea of partners in this one conference, and certainly that sea is much larger outside the conference, you know, what we're always looking for in a partner are those that are bringing us net new solutions, bringing us new opportunities, thinking about how our cloud can help transform delivery of healthcare. And if I think about some of the most recent partners I've spoken with, you know, two or three partners at HIMSS I spoke with were really taking a new look at analytics and how you take what's available publicly and build it into a predictive analytics model that then helps the provider understand where they are as it relates to those key outcomes measurements. Because today, if I look across that provider landscape, there's not a single provider out there that's not paying some type of penalty because their outcomes are not measuring where they need to be. And I mentioned maybe three or four of those outcomes earlier. There's 30 different outcomes being measured for providers today. And so it's very difficult for them to understand, first of all, exactly where they are now, and then predictably understand where they're going to be a month from now, 3 months from now, 6 months from now, and then also put in place a solution that will help drive improved outcomes across specific measurements. And so that seems to be a key area now, is really capitalizing on the data that's in the system, really putting that data in the cloud to where it's very easily accessible, applying machine learning to that data that sits there, and then providing that Power BI interface, that dashboard that allows me to see the data as it sits today, and then be able to move the data around, the charts around, and really live and breathe inside that data to improve my outcomes. And improving outcomes is important financially, but more importantly, the outcomes are important for the consumer. We want their health to continue to improve, and we want them to really enjoy living their lives based on the wellness or the health platform that we're delivering to them, which is all about their care pathways and how they're being looked at both inside our system and outside our system as a healthcare provider. So we're always looking for those partners that are doing net new things and allowing us to help our providers and ultimately help the consumers.
You and I both know that Microsoft operates a fairly extensive scorecard model or set of metrics that they use to measure the organizational performance of the business and the results on the business. What are the priorities this year? What are the things that are top of mind for the business from a scorecard perspective? And how are you measuring against those?
I say that, you know, all up, if you read anything in the press today, from the top, from Satya Nadella, who's our CEO, all the way through, the focus is on that digital transformation. Most of our scorecard measures are based on digitally transforming our customers' business with them and helping them to see better results as a result of that digital transformation. And that's very much focused on our cloud platforms. So the key measurements that we look to in our scorecard is the adoption of the cloud platform. And adoption is also means consumption. So in the past, you know, you and I haven't worked with each other, Vince, over several years at Microsoft. We know that at Microsoft, it was that typical three-year cycle where there'd be a product that would be released, and sometime within that next 3 years, there'd be additional features and benefits, and a new release would come out. Customers would either have software assurance, or they may not have software assurance that would help them get to that next release. But it was typically a three-year cycle from the time that a product was released until the time that a new product was released with new features. Now that's happening every day. So Azure as a cloud platform had hundreds of net new features, benefits, opportunities, if you will, developed on the platform last year. That trend's continuing this year. So how do we measure ourselves against the quick adoption of Azure? It really is how our healthcare customers are viewing the cloud, how they're adopting that, and then who are the ISV partners, solution partners, that are then populating that cloud with value. And the value is in the solution for that particular provider. It could be a solution that helps them do something very simply from a privacy and security perspective. It could help prevent ransomware. It can help prevent loss of PHI, patient health information. It could be something fairly complex that takes what's living and breathing inside an electronic medical record in a platform such as a Cerner or an Epic or a McKesson or an Allscripts. It could take that information and provide us a view into that information that helps us populate an enterprise-wide master patient index so that we know where a patient lives inside of our system. So as they travel from perhaps a vacation in Florida and an event that happens there into your home city of Austin, as a provider, I recognize them as that same patient that was on vacation in Florida as the one that lives in my backyard in Austin. So having the ability for all of that wellness information, health information to follow that patient from place to place inside of my system as a provider and recognize that patient as the same patient is critical for me to be able to provide them the correct health. But we're constantly being measured scorecard-wise on the adoption of the cloud platform and then utilization of that cloud platform. So I see that as kind of the nurture and growth of cloud. The same thing happens with Office 365 for us as a cloud platform. So initially, most people look at Office 365 as just that, is Office plus Outlook. But there's so much more that can be done within healthcare around that platform from a care coordination, care collaboration, patient engagement perspective. So our scorecard for Office 365 is the adoption and the continued deployment or consumption of that. For me, I look at that as a key measurement of do we have the right partners and the right solutions such that those customers are actually seeing the value and then deploying that value and continuing to consume the cloud and digitally transform their business.
So I heard a couple of things here. I heard one was that, you know, moving from a 3-year product life cycle or roadmap to now hundreds and hundreds of feature sets being delivered each year on the Azure platform. How do you get partners enabled and up on the technology or keep them up on the technology? And then how, you mentioned needing these partners that have disparate solutions. How do you then go and recruit and find these partners?
Right. So let me answer the first one and see if I can also remember the second one when I get to it.
I'll remind you.
So when we think about enablement and readiness for our partners, it's never ending, right? So with new features, new products being released inside of these overarching cloud platforms on a almost weekly basis, the learning never stops. So it's up to Microsoft within the Microsoft Partner Network to provide avenues for that training to occur. So we constantly have learning opportunities presented to partners within the Microsoft Partner Network. Those are predominantly online, and there are also live events as well they can participate in to increase their learning. Certainly, we look at partners to increase their competencies, and we have, I think today, well over 40-plus competencies that we look at and that partners can ascribe to. What I mean by that is we look at our partners and say, you know, so where do you really want to provide value? And if you tell me that it's Azure, okay, more specifically in Azure, where are your solutions and where are your resources going to be pointed? Are you going to be looking at Azure from a machine learning AI perspective? Are you going to be looking at Azure from a data lake perspective? Are you going to be looking to combine that with Cortana Analytics and with SQL sitting in Azure? So we really want to get very granular about where they believe they can achieve and add value and provide the proper readiness and the proper training so they can accelerate that learning and also stay ready, if you will, and stay learning throughout. And so we have a lot of online resources within U.S. partner strategy and programs. I think you spoke with Eric Loper in one of your series earlier. Within that same organization, there's a partner development unit or a PDU. And they have specific partners they're working with on a daily basis to ensure that we are enabling their readiness and constantly keeping them up to date and highly skilled and providing value back out to our customers on a day-in, day-out type basis.
What do you believe are the top attributes of successful partners working with you in your time and role? And what made them successful?
Yeah, what made them successful, I think, is a great question. What makes a partner successful is understanding their value first. They have to understand their value to the marketplace within healthcare. For example, is my value going to be within a particular solution area, a particular business need area? I have a partner that I'm working with a little bit later today. They're very pointed and they understand what their value is. And as a result, they're being very successful. They've got a lot of momentum and they're very young. They're about 18 months into their Microsoft partnership. But because they're very prescriptive about what they do, they understand where their value is, and also because they know the industry in depth and have been in the industry for a long time, they can walk the walk, talk the talk, and they can have conversations at multiple levels with the CIO, with the chief medical officer, with the chief nursing officer, with the senior VP of recruitment, with the senior VP of talent retention. They can have those conversations and understand the dynamics and also the key goals that each one of those individuals or groups have. So I think, first of all, it's understanding your own value as a partner. Where are you? How do you present yourself? And what are your key deliverables that you bring as far as value to an end customer? And then secondly, it's translating that back into a conversation with Microsoft. And you translate that across multiple teams. So first of all, you translate that to a partner salesperson like myself or others that sit in the ecosystem. You also need to be able to translate that back to the specialist community. So across most of our selling organizations, we have what's called a specialist team unit or an STU. And Microsoft has acronyms for everything. That STU has specialists that focused on particular parts of our ecosystem, our solution ecosystem. So we have specialists on Azure, specialists on Office 365, specialists on data platforms, specialists on security, et cetera. But being able to bring that value back to that group so they can in turn be able to understand and listen for conversations that they're having with their customers and be able to position the correct partner into that conversation. And I think lastly, but certainly not, you know, any less important, is being able to position yourself with the sales teams. There's one thing that differentiates us from the other cloud providers out there, whether it be Google or AWS or others, is that we have salespeople living and breathing in accounts every day. And they're constantly looking for ways to bring better value to our customers. And the chief way of bringing better value to our customers is through partners and partner solutions. You know, it's kind of like the old BASF commercial. You know, we don't make something, we only make it better. I think partners in this case, they take what we provide and they make it better. They make it resonate more loudly with the customer. They tailor it so that it drives a specific solution to a specific business need and a specific industry. And so I'd say partners need to understand who they are, the value they present, and they also need to be able to align to the various teams that sit within Microsoft and project that same value to them. So we in turn become that sales engine for that partner.
What are the pitfalls that these partners should avoid in engaging with the teams?
Well, I think that the one that I get all the time is, you know, can you please just send me a list of your sales teams? I want to reach out and send them an email. Our sellers are inundated with email. I mean, Microsoft lives and breathes on email. And then certainly, you know, in the time that you and I worked together, I know that we had conversations about just the volume of email that flows through Microsoft on a daily basis. And as a partner, just sending an email to an account executive or to a STU team member or even to a partner sales executive in some cases and saying this is who we are is typically not the right approach. An email is probably going to be dropped into an unread situation and potentially just fall off of the radar over time just because it will stay in an unread situation in the inbox. The proper path is to come with a value statement, which is, we've engaged X number of customers in this dialogue, and what they've found is that our solution brings great value into their business and great value into a solution stream that we believe can be replicated across multiple accounts. Because most of our account executives are managing more than a single account. Yes, you'll have a few of those out there that have the large global accounts, and they'll have large global teams working underneath them. And they'll be managing, you know, one account. But for the most part, from our enterprise account space to our corporate account space to our breadth space, account executives are managing across dozens of accounts, in some cases, hundreds of accounts. Our specialists are across dozens and hundreds of accounts as well. And so what they want to be able to see is a solution from a partner that has ability to scale across multiple accounts. In other words, it can be replicated across multiple accounts and bring great value in each and every single one of those engagements. So if you can understand that value, present that value, and have an opportunity to engage in active dialogue around your discussion, around your solution, then what you'll find is much better engagement than just sending an email and being hopeful that someone reads it and recognizes the value.
It sounds like a pretty tough process to work across the field organization at Microsoft. And I know you take some steps throughout the year in terms of what you call account planning strategy and partner engagement. Can you expand on that? What does successful account planning strategy look like, and how can partners engage that way?
Yeah, and kind of going back to what I think we initially started off with in describing my job, what I'm really focused on is helping my partners to build their business. And, you know, I have multiple customers. My customers are my internal customers, so it's my direct management team, it's the product groups and the product teams. So multiple customers sit inside of Microsoft that I'm trying to ensure that we're helping them to meet their goals through partners. Obviously, we have multiple customers in U.S. healthcare today. We have roughly 5,500 customers across the U.S., plus another 200 or so that sit in the very large enterprise space. And so we're trying to ensure that our partners are providing value to them. So when we think about successful account planning, it's really trying to boil it down to the partner's value to the account teams at the beginning of the year and throughout the year. I see kind of two critical timings, if you will. So one of those is as we begin the fiscal year. And typically what we've done in U.S. healthcare is we've had partner planning days with our sellers and with our specialist teams to provide a platform for our partners to talk about their solutions, to talk about their services, to talk about their organization, so that everybody all at one time, you know, is absorbing that information and getting to better understand the partner. And then once kind of those introductions and that knowledge sharing is done, then really start thinking about the solution and where it plays within that particular account executives or within that particular specialist team's set of customers. And so the critical piece, I think, is that beginning of the year planning, because beginning of the year for Microsoft also knows that there are investments being made by our product teams and our business groups to help drive their solutions. Those usually come in the way of programs. Those programs can also have funding attached to them. So it's important for the partner to recognize that at the beginning of the year, typically in the August, September timeframe, we'll begin to see the programs and the funding be released. Want to make sure that they capitalize on that and engage in those processes appropriately. And then, you know, kind of at that midpoint, we used to have what we would call mid-year. It was a very prescriptive, resource-intensive, several weeks of reporting back to our senior leadership how we were doing and where we were projecting close by the end of June. That formal mid-year process has gone away. It's more informal now. Certainly the measurements are still there. Certainly the conversations still occur, but we're not really pooling all those resources into providing heavy, heavy documentation into the process. But for me, that mid-year turn, so coming out of the holiday season and going into January, is critical for me to understand what my portfolio looks like from a partner perspective, how we're performing, and what are those things that we need to do to increase momentum across the partners that are in the business? And then are there net new discoveries to be made where we have gaps in the business and we need more partner capacity? So for a partner, you know, I'd say make sure that you're at Inspire, which used to be Worldwide Partner Conference, but that you attend Inspire this year. That's always in the July timeframe. Learn about the programs, learn about the direction of Microsoft. participate in as many conversations as you can while you're there. Take away as much information as you can while you're there. Get all the links, listen to the guidance, and be ready for the planning sessions that will follow typically in the August, September timeframe.
We'll provide our listeners with a link to the Worldwide Partner Conference or Inspire Conference, which I believe is July 9th through the 13th. Correct, Bill?
It is. It's in DC this year. And I believe it's the second week in July. Typically what we do is we don't try and schedule it over the top of July 4th or that weekend. I believe it's the following week this year in DC, and I certainly will provide you that link in the registration information. It's just a tremendous opportunity to not only learn and grow and your knowledge of how you can grow your business with Microsoft. It's very pointed about what the directives and objectives are from a senior level for Microsoft over the next year and how a partner can align with that to really grow their business and become more profitable. Many, many sessions last year around growing a partner's profitability. We'll have the same focus this year. We want to make sure that we're providing our partners every opportunity to be as profitable as possible with us and to grow their business based on our cloud services, and to help our partners innovate, quite frankly, and continue to drive digital transformation with our customers. So it's just a great event. And I'd say, you know, top of mind for me every year is just net new relationships that I build. It's a tremendous networking 3 to 4 days. I walk away completely refreshed, and at the same time, also somewhat overwhelmed by the number of new people I've met, the great follow-up that comes after that, and the opportunity that's going to be ahead for that next fiscal year.
So, Bill, I want you to think about a partner that was wildly successful. Like, what was the one thing they did differently than all the other partners you worked with in that particular area, whether it was O365 or Azure or CRM? What set them apart from the rest?
Yeah, and I'll probably just draw to something that's, you know, a recent memory because I'm actively, you know, engaged in helping them build their business. What I would say is the willingness to do what it takes. I think that, you know, unfortunately, I think we run across this fairly often is there's always the opportunity to talk a good game, but the opportunity to actually perform at a very high level and do it consistently and do what it takes, no matter what it takes, to really be responsible for growing the business is a rarity, quite frankly. I've got a partner I'm working with now in a specific program. Interestingly enough, I met the partner through an old relationship that I had brokered probably, I'm going to say, you know, 10 to 12 years ago, and then continued to keep in touch with this individual, and they landed at a new company, introduced me. I kind of took the call on a whim. I happened to be in the Nashville office. I was going to be there the next day and sat down to have a meeting. As we walked through what the partner's capabilities were, you know, it was just kind of checking all the right boxes. They were focused on our cloud services. They had a really strong competency rating, gold competencies across several areas. So they had the training, the readiness that they needed to be able to speak well and perform well with our customers and also with our internal teams. But the thing that's really stuck with me is I placed them into a program that was somewhat limited in scope because I just felt positive about just that initial relationship and the first two or three discussions and felt like they were going to try and make a difference. You know, they're proving that out of all the partners that are in this program, and I've got five or six participating. They're the only net new one that's in, and they're outperforming the other partners that I've known now, I know, for 5 to 6 years, and it's because of their willingness to work across all sizes of customers. And when I look at, you know, my customer mix, I have quite a few enterprise customers, but I have many, many more breadth customers. They're all struggling to go through this digital transformation. They're so used to being able to reach out and touch their server underneath the desktop. They're so used to having a small IT staff that goes across, you know, maybe two or three different offices and being able to have, you know, their staff touching their servers, doing that networking, doing those upgrades. And the whole cloud piece is a little bit difficult for them to understand. But once they understand it and understand the value, now they truly recognize the value of those people that have been in those roles before to be able to innovate net new ways to engage with their customers. And so this particular partner, I would say, just really took on the challenge and the proven time and again, they're willing to do what it takes to have that conversation with the customer and to help them understand in a very real way, whether it be a proof of concept or a workshop, the value of the cloud.
I'm going to shift the conversation, Bill, and ask you some questions about you and your career and your trajectory and journey. What is the most worthwhile piece of advice someone gave you when you took this role?
You know, and it's really probably some of the best advice I've been given recently, which is it's easy to get lost at a big company. There's so much going on every day and there's so many different priorities. And understanding which priority to really pay attention to is also difficult. And so someone told me really about a year and a half ago, hey, you know what? You need to be in the bill business. And that means understand, you know, as an individual, what's important. Prioritize every day and make sure that you don't prioritize just what's important for the company. Realize that that work is a part of your life. It's not your entire life. And make sure that you be in your own business. You're promoting your well-being. You're promoting your growth. You're promoting your career path. And that you're driving those key relationships that will enable you to continue to grow. And that's to grow both within a career, so to speak, and also grow as an individual.
Who was one of your role models and what advice or what attributes did you learn from them?
One, I would say that I learned about fairly young, and I've always been an athlete and I've always played in team sports for the most part, individual sports a little bit as well, was John Wooden. And the way I think about John Wooden, his strong belief in both the individual and the team. I'll always remember kind of this one thing Bill Walton brought forward in a conversation I was having about John Wooden, and it's been written up in several books, is Bill Walton was seen somewhat as a rebel, obviously, kind of the long hair, kind of involved in the protest movement at the time, et cetera. You know, coming into practice, you know, what John Wooden observed was, yeah, he was a little bit kind of, I'd say, disheveled looking, for lack of a better word. But the one thing that John Wooden sat down with Bill Walton on and all of his players on is just one simple thing. And it all starts there. It's kind of interesting. Kind of have to understand where everything starts. As, you know, are your socks on correctly? Right? If your socks aren't on correctly, if they're not fitting right, if your shoe's not tied correctly, you're going to get a blister. If you get a blister on your foot, on your heel, you're not going to be able to play at 100%. It's going to turn to something worse. So just sitting down with the players and ensuring they understood how to put their socks on.
I remember that very well, in fact. And I've learned firsthand when not putting on my socks, getting blisters.
So I think when I think about Bill Walton, I think about that. And obviously Bill Walton has what he calls the pyramid of success. The other thing, Vince, you know about me, and we spent some time talking about is, I was a soccer coach for a number of years, 15 plus years. I coached travel teams that traveled all over the country, played in college showcase tournaments. About a month ago, I had the opportunity to go to a few more college signings of players that I had coached over the years and were now signing their way onto Division I or Division II soccer teams. You know, I've had roughly, I think last count, it was either 38 or 39 players that have gone on from where I coached them in some of their formative years and some of them all the way through high school have gone on to play in college. And the thing that I really learned to appreciate from the pyramid of success from John Wooden was just the love of the sport. And it comes from taking on responsibility. If you can't take on responsibility, then your teammates can't rely on you. Your teammates can't rely on you, then the coaches can't rely on you. And then the results are not going to be what they should be. But if you love the sport, you also love the responsibility that comes with it. And so I think as a career goal, it's always about, you know, do you enjoy your job? If you do enjoy your job, there's going to be some things that you're going to have to take on from a responsibility perspective to make sure that others enjoy having you as well, working with them side by side as a part of a team. I see my career as a team sport. Because I'm only as good as my team is around me, whether I'm managing that team or whether I'm a part of that team. I'm really ever going to be as good as the team is around me. And so if I can really love what I do and project that, and I can help others love what they do, then the additional responsibility that comes from day to day or week to week or month to month, where it be reports or specific goals or scorecards or whatever, that will just be taken on gladly because we're at a point where we recognize that responsibility is a part of actually loving the job that you're in.
What advice would you give your 30-year-old self, Bill?
Have more confidence in what it is that you've learned up to that point. I think I always assumed that people recognize the experiences that I've had, the experience that I can bring into a conversation, et cetera. But people are not always cognizant of that. And being able to approach a situation with a strong confidence in what you understand, strong confidence in what your experiences have provided you, and strong confidence in being able to project that into a conversation or into a relationship, into a business discussion, into a recommendation. So as a 30-year-old, I would say that I was at a point in my career where I was moving from kind of a small regional IT player into an up-and-coming. Getting that next step into that larger opportunity helped me understand that somebody did recognize that experience and did recognize, too, that I had confidence in what I had done up until that point, and that allowed me to kind of grow my confidence more quickly. So as a 30-year-old, I would say that having self-confidence and self-awareness was something that I had just gotten to the cusp of understanding and learning.
I have two more questions for you.
Okay.
What one thing that Microsoft doesn't teach, but you believe is true to successfully partnering with Microsoft?
One thing. I can think of several events. What I would say that the one thing that is so critical is building relationships. I think that Microsoft as a company, it's all about building your business from a competency, from a resources perspective, having all those pieces so that you're ready to go to market. But what we really don't teach very well as how do you build relationships so you can actually be in market. We provide a lot of programs around that, and we'll continue to name net new programs from, you know, Azure Everywhere to SQL Everywhere to Azure Go Fast to you name a program, and, you know, we're going to come up with a name for it, and they'll all have some type of go-to-market requirement and or scorecard that goes with them to drive a particular solution. But what we really don't do a great job in doing is helping our partners understand what are those critical relationships they need to have at a field level to actually get in market. If I look at how we're trying to go to market today with ISV, you know, everybody about this time last year learned how to spell ISV at Microsoft. And so there are a lot of resources and a lot of people that are engaged in helping us build that ISV community, those net new solutions. And there are specific motions that help our ISV partners get into a what we call a co-sell enablement mode. But where I feel like that we really are not as crisp and as good yet is helping the partners understand how they go from a mechanical go-to-market readiness into a real in-market with our field sellers and with our customers. And so it's a difficult thing, too, because each segment at Microsoft is a little bit different than the other. Vertical segments are different from commercial segments. Within commercial segments, whether it be small and medium business, whether it be corporate accounts or enterprise accounts, they're all a little bit different. And even though the titles look pretty much the same, the way that those roles fit into a particular market strategy or customer strategy can be very, very different. And the responsibilities and the scorecarding and the way that those resources are actually paid is very different as well. And so understanding those relationships, understanding how a partner's business fits into any of those segments, and then critically understanding those relationships that can help them grow their business the quickest is something that I wish that we were better at.
You know, that's really great advice, Bill, because I do think that some partners believe that one size fits all across the business. And as you point out, each of these business units, whether they be the SMB business, the the CAM, the CTM, the enterprise, the healthcare, the government, education, all go to market a little bit differently.
They do, and the thinking is that each one of those, and it's accurate, that each one of those segments has a particular approach to better address the market as a whole. Enterprise customers expect something a little bit different than a small and medium business customer, even though the end need is to help them be more profitable in their business and be able to provide better service or better product to their end customers. The way they approach that, the amount of resource they may have to be able to enable that is very, very different. And so the approach to that business is going to be different too from a Microsoft perspective.
Got one last question for you. If you had a billboard there on the highway in Nashville overlooking the Microsoft building, what would that billboard say?
Well, it could certainly say our mission statement. I'm not sure that I'd want to do a repeat of that. I think that everybody's heard that as far as, you know, really, truly enabling everyone, whether it's a person, an organization, a business, to achieve more. You know, the billboard over the top of the Microsoft building there could very easily read, achieve more here. And I think that'd be a great statement to have over the top of the building. But from a partner perspective, you know, what I'd love for it to say is build your business with us. Because I think that if I look across our competitors, or I look across the landscape, if I look at where Microsoft continues to project, to grow, and to build, there's not a better place to build your business than to build it with Microsoft. We have the ability to help any partner be profitable. Now, figuring that out along the way sometimes is a little complex, quite frankly, but we have the capability to do that. And we truly do believe in our mission to helping everyone achieve more. And you just see it day in, day out, and the passion and the people and the passion we go about. So I'd say build your business here would be the best billboard over the top of the Microsoft building.
Sounds like a great opportunity for our partners in healthcare working with you and the team, Bill. I want to thank you for your time today. I think this has been extremely valuable for partners looking to engage in healthcare. Any last parting comments for those partners listening today?
I'd say just that. The opportunity is immense in healthcare today. The amount of change going on in healthcare is at a very rapid pace, and it's nonstop. Within healthcare, within Microsoft, we're going to continue to transform. As a partner, it's going to be an ongoing opportunity. You're going to be able to create and build and recreate and build again with Microsoft and in healthcare. And as a result, bring great value to your customers and also bring great profitability to your bottom line. So come build with us.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks, Vince.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Ultimate Guide to Partnering with your host, Vince Minzione. Online at ultimateguidetopartnering.com and facebook.com/ultimateguidetopartnering. We'll catch you next time on The Ultimate Guide to Partnering.